We've had a lot of conversations on this show about violence in the schools. This school year was rough on a lot of kids. Many struggled to adjust to schedules, classes, and social circles after having been out of the classroom for more than a year. That frustration became evident in the intense violence that school authorities reported, including the alleged attempted murder of a teacher. So some are wondering what's going to happen this summer with kids out of school, out of the classroom, and with less supervision. Maybe you remember a large incident with young people at a Las Vegas mall last year. Project Real wants parents and anyone who works with kids to start talking now, before summer break begins, to get ahead of whatever emotional turmoil or frustration might be festering. Joining me now is Mike Kamer, Project Real's Senior Director. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Mike. So this school year was rocky. Kids were back in the classrooms after more than a year of distance learning. They were just getting back into the social flow. There was more intense violence exemplified by that alleged attempted murder. It was a lot to take in. Talk about the impact we saw on those kids.
Sure. So there was this sense from children that we were expecting, children and teens, that when they got back to the schools, they missed out on a year of living, right? Like, they were away from their friends. They were sticking close to home. So they had this our prediction was that there would be this YOLO mentality, this you only live once. I lost this time with friends. I want to make up for it. And with that comes this sense of higher risk-taking or comfort with higher risk-taking that we were concerned about. So that's where we created some interventions to address that.
You were anticipating this to be happening?
Yeah. That incident at the mall was before students were headed back to the classroom in 2021. So we looked at that. We kind of took a natural sense of what could go missing, how kids are. We've all been kids. And we worked to address it. And so we came up with an intervention to acknowledge that kids were going to have a higher sense for a higher tolerance for risk taking.
Did you see social media playing a role in some of these issues?
Of course. You had, before schools got back in session, things, even in California, there was a massive beach party in Huntington Beach that caused all sorts of problems called Adrian's Kickback. And then there was here, you had something nationally, the TikTok thing with Devious Licks, where students were going and stealing things that they didn't need. And posting it and then trying to outdo each other, which was creating kind of a feedback loop.
Yeah, I do remember that. You know, Mike, you've said you're worried about the trouble kids might get into this summer, but doesn't that kind of thing always happen during the summer? I mean, I'm sure you did crazy things not too long ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but, you know, you did crazy things when you were a teenager or younger.
Sure. I think our concern here is, again, that making up for lost time. And now, after a year of having been back in school around peers and having not just developed that higher sense of risk taking, but it's become normalized among students and among teens. So where before maybe they would have been more cautious about their decisions, after having spent a year seeing their peers having shorter triggers with fighting in schools and reacting more quickly, it's become this normal thing where they're potentially willing to take on even more risk, but now they're doing it away from the structure and supervision that schools provide.
And yet, I'm still going to ask this question. I wonder if we're putting the cart before the horse, because nobody really knows what this summer is going to be like. Maybe the freedom from the classrooms will be just the opposite. Maybe kids will feel more relaxed. Maybe they'll be, you know, staring at the clouds and enjoying life. Or is there research or something from sociologists or psychologists warning that something bad is about to come?
For us, we're just looking at what we've already seen. We saw what happened at the Meadows Mall when kids were away back then.
Real briefly, what did happen?
Right. So there were over 100 students involved in what started as a few students bothering a security guard, led to videos across social media of kids just running rampant through the mall. There were fights taking place. And I believe it led to some arrests of those 100 students.
So what are we seeing things as well that you consider these sort of accidental crimes that you will be talking to parents about and that you have a guide which we're going to talk about in a minute, that also talks about accidental crimes.
Sure. So things where kids think, oh, this is something that I'm going to get grounded for or potentially detention if they're in school, but then in the real world, they're actually facing criminal consequences. Those are things like graffiti, trespassing, and even this TikTok stuff, like the Devious Licks thing. They're thinking, oh, well, if I'm stealing this item and then setting it aside and just really moving it, I'm not a criminal risk. I'm just risking trouble. Then they end up finding out, oh, no, this was theft. This was property destruction. The cost it takes to repair the damage I caused by engaging in a prank like that actually has a real criminal consequence to it.
I'm talking with Mike Kamer. He is with Project Real. Project Real talks with young people about how to navigate the legal world and some of the consequences of their actions. School is out in 6 days, and there are concerns at Project Real and among parents and some teachers that kids might not make the best choices with all that time off. It's especially concerning this year after the pandemic seemed to play a major role in kids' mental health and education. Mike, I also want to mention hate crimes. We've heard about things like this happening in our schools. What can happen if a kid is caught harassing or assaulting someone because of their race, their sexual orientation, or their mental capabilities?
Sure. I mean, again, the schools have the opportunity to intervene, and the consequences there might be something like expulsion. But if they're caught out in the real world, there are criminal consequences, and those can include hate crime charges hate crime enhancements of whatever charges they face. So that for us is a concern. And even if as much as the students being back together on school, it's really easy to go online and say something because kids like to trash talk, and that trash talk amounting to a hate crime, things like that happen. And it can translate to real world actions like graffiti. There's this phrase edgelords for kids on the internet who go around to just try to outdo each other with comedy. So they might not even have hate in their heart, but if they're doing things like, we're going to do this graffiti because it's edgy, and then they're committing a hate crime without the intent being there. That's the kind of thing we want kids to understand. There are consequences for your actions, and they're greater than you might realize.
Now, your organization, Project Real, it wants to reach out to these kids before these things happen and reach out to their parents. And you recently came out with a guide to help kids understand the consequences of their actions. What's in this guide?
Sure. So what the guide is it's meant to shape a conversation. So we want adults to read it, where it gives kind of four different steps about how to points you want to hit. And then 10 different categories of accidental crimes, things where kids might think this is the kind of thing I'll get grounded for instead of arrested. And then just help the parents talk with their parents or guardians to talk with the young people in their home about what these things are and how to think within the law is the ultimate goal of the conversation. Basically, you know, lawyers go to law school for 3 years at a time. We don't require students to learn about the laws they're being held accountable to anyway. How do we balance those scales?
Kids 14, let's say, to 16, they're interested in all kinds of different things. Relationships, you know, hanging out. And some parents going to sit down and try to talk them about the legal consequences of their actions. Do you think do you have any evidence that this stuff sinks in or that the kids actually listen to this? I mean, or should the parents just say, you know, you do something stupid and you're in big trouble.
Right. So students don't – adults tend to think, oh, if we tell kids, you know, don't steal, don't cheat, don't hurt anyone, and don't do drugs, and as long as you're following those and don't ruin other people's property, if you follow those rules, you're going to be fine. And if not, you'll get in trouble. But they're not really weighing the actual legal consequences. Some of that's because the adults don't know themselves or they don't understand always. We don't teach or require people in Nevada to learn laws as part of their K-12 education. And that kind of gap can cause problems where people are, I didn't realize that, you know, they're saying, I didn't realize that was a crime, but unfortunately courts don't recognize ignorance of the law as a defense for breaking it.
So how do your efforts or your messages change for a fourth grader or versus an eighth grader or a senior in high school?
It really depends on who is delivering the conversation. That's what's kind of great about the guide. You read it, you shape the conversation. Right now, the conversation's called Real Ready, and we have a Real Ready coordinator who's out at, I want to say, Hickey Elementary this morning, and then Smalley in the afternoon. So she'll connect with those teachers first, ask if what they've seen and what they're concerned with, what's been happening after school, in school, and then shape the conversation based on the neighborhood. And we can do that for both neighborhoods, geographic, and then, yeah, age groups. So with teens, perfect example, teens, one of the things we'll use as an example if we go into a high school and talk to them is about stealing from your employers. So we regularly see on TikTok teenagers posting using coupons at their job when people pay cash and then pocketing the change. And they're thinking, oh, I'm just using a little extra money that would have been a coupon anyway. That's stealing from an employer. That has criminal consequences. And they're posting it online because they do not understand the consequences of what they're actually doing, which is frustrating and concerning.
See, you're talking about a vast sort of way different levels of different things that kids can get in trouble with. As a parent myself, I was thinking more about, you know, my teenager, he's going to go out with a bunch of friends, and I see the friends pull up in a convertible, and I think, oh, they probably got a six-pack in there somewhere. They're probably smoking weed or something later on. So I'm in that situation. My kid's about to get in that car. Well, given your guide, given what you know, is there anything I can say to my teenager at that point that is going to prevent them from getting into big trouble?
I think it's just clarifying that, look, it's not like what you see on TV where kids get away with this stuff. Media does play a role in it. For an example, I don't know if everyone's watching the Karate Kid sequel TV series, but those kids get in tons of fights and only one of them ends up with facing criminal consequences. The real world isn't like that. And so students are seeing these things and interpreting it as, oh, you know, the consequences are minimal. Having parents equipped to have these conversations with the young people in their homes, sorry, parents and guardians, is really important because we're helping the students make informed decisions, or at least more informed decisions.
There's a parent on here right now, probably somewhere saying, this applies to other kids, not mine. My kid's an angel. What would you say to him?
Google 311 boys if you're new to town. This was an incident. I want to say the students were at Centennial High School, affluent neighborhoods at the time, possibly still, and they were getting in massive amounts of trouble. But also, it takes a 30-second decision for a kid to really mess up their lives. A straight-A student can go with their friends into an abandoned building, think, oh, we're just exploring. It's this cool space. There's no necessarily trespassing signs anywhere. And then when they're walking out, if say somebody was in there doing graffiti, there's a fresh spray can, they're all ending up facing charges for something like that. Constructive possession is another one. If one of you have a straight A student, right? Their friend who gets in a little bit of trouble pulls up with the car, says, get in, they go for a ride, and then they get pulled over. If the car's stolen, if that troublesome kid didn't have permission to have the vehicle, that straight A student can be, it's called constructive possession. You know, they're responsible for being in a stolen vehicle, and there are serious criminal consequences for something like that. It takes so little for a life changing decision to take place that our belief is this conversation is very important.
Well, you know, one more thing I'm thinking about is, so a parent has this angel, they're listening to you right now, they get the guide. You know, how do they talk to their kid about this without putting the kid on the defense where, you know, the kid's like, whoa, dog, you know, or whatever the colloquialism is these days. You know, I'm a good kid. I'm not going to do anything. But how do you say it to them in a way where they're not going to come back at you and attack you for accusing them?
Well, and I think I just said it right there. It takes 30 seconds to make a life-changing decision. It's something so small that we just want – and we encourage the parents to clarify that if you just pause before you prank, if you make it a habit to think within the law, you can protect yourselves. And really, so when we go into schools and talk about this, we tell kids, life isn't fair. You can face criminal consequences for doing something that you didn't know was wrong. And so we just want to help you protect yourself. And taking that tone, which is clearly kind of lined out in the guide, helps kids to listen. And since we started emphasizing that when we're talking to students in school, that's when we see them responding to our conversation with lots more questions and engaging more. So we've really made that tone of the conversation central to it.
We have a minute left. The guide has been out. Are you getting any kind of response?
Yes. We actually have been, they've been trickling in, but we've been getting calls from retired teachers, grandparents, people calling us and saying, thank you so much for doing this. Where was it when I was growing up? Why don't we have more of this?